welcome to another episode of the Walks of Life podcast. My name is Kritha Srinivasan. I am your host of this podcast series. On my episode today, I have with me Sudarshan Ramamurthy, who is an author of a children's novel. Now, the reason I brought him on my podcast is because I wanted to discuss about how writing for children is different from writing in general. Because we all read children's books when we were children. And I recently read a children's book when I was an adult. And oh my god, the writing seems a little difficult. Me being a writer myself, I find that very interesting. So I sat down with Sudarshan to find out what he does differently to write for children. Is writing for children for everybody? What are the important parameters to keep in mind, you know, when you're especially catering to an audience that is not really that informed about the technicalities of writing? So this is a really fun listen. So please pay attention if you are interested in this and tell me know what you think about the podcast. This is my podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, fake applause break. This is the episode number, I think, 7?
Yeah.
No, 6. Okay. Between I don't know when I'm going to put this up, actually. It's up to me now.
Yeah.
Soda is my good friend. We did stand up together a bunch of times. He's primarily running the comedy scene in Chennai right now.
Contributing.
Yeah, contributing quite well. He runs this thing called Chennai Comedy. They produce most of the shows that I have been part of there.
Yeah.
It's either you guys or it's Avam.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the reason I have him on my podcast here today is because he has done some form of writing that I'm never even going to attempt. It's writing for children. You are an author, right?
Sort of. Yes, yeah.
And how did that happen? Before we start, to anybody who doesn't know you at all, can you just give me a quick introduction?
So, quick introduction. I am the youngest comedian from Chennai to go full-time at my age. Yeah. I'm 22. I was full-time. I'm the youngest comedy producer in Chennai, and I am the youngest in my family.
Oh, sweet. So that's
yeah, so these are my qualifications that I am proud of, but otherwise...
And before stand-up happened, where was Soda?
So before stand-up happened, actually the name Soda is not even a stand-up name. It came to me because like years before I started stand-up or even got on stage, we had a WhatsApp group where one friend said, I will nickname everybody based on autocorrect. And so she started typing my name, it became Soda, and then I had to, you know, own up to the name.
Right.
So I started with writing actually pretty late in life. Like, I'm not one of those kids who has been writing poems and all of that.
Right.
I think 10th grade, yeah, I think 9th or 10th grade. 10th grade is when I started writing poetry.
Yeah.
And the first thing was, like, I was talking on the phone with a friend of mine, and I was talking about how curd rice is this amazing thing. And like how it goes well with everything. And surely you need a blog. You know, you should blog this.
You wanted to blog about curd rice.
No, actually I didn't blog about curd rice. But right. I did my first blog. I mean, it's like a very emotional, cheesy thing. But my first blog was for my sister on her birthday. So because she writes a lot. So I thought, okay, I'll start a blog and I'll write you a blog post as the first blog post for your birthday.
Correct.
And this was before WordPress and Tumblr were there. It was just Blogspot. And then after that, I used to write poems in this notebook I had. And mainly, like, it was crowdsourced.
Right.
Like, somebody would give me a topic and then I would write on that.
Uh-huh.
And I was a firm believer that poems are supposed to rhyme.
Supposed to rhyme, yeah.
Yeah, because I'm like, if you're going to call it free verse, then you're just being lazy. You know?
Correct, yeah.
And then I was doing that and then I was getting good feedback. And, you know, there was this one time, Orkut was a thing back then.
Yeah,
Orkut. And there was this one girl.
Did you write poem testimonials for people? That's
no, I didn't write poem testimonials. But what happened is there was this girl who was the sister of my classmate, and she started appreciating my poems because I would put it up on Orkut or something. And then like every day I would write, and then lunch break I will give it to her. She'll read it in the evening. She'll give me feedback and give me the notebook back. So like she would like on Orkut, like that's how she would like talk about my poems and all of that.
Ah, sweet.
And then I got into writing professionally like my second year of college.
Okay.
That's when I discovered content writing.
And how did the book happen? Let's talk about your book a little bit.
So the book happened because mainly I was doing storytelling and I was doing stand-up also by then. Mm-hmm. And my boss came to me and said, hey, listen, why don't you write a book for kids? Because you're funny and you can write. So might as well put both those two things together. And I... wrote my first book was I co-authored that book with a few people, and it was about travel stories. It's called Traveling Lights.
Okay.
Light. Traveling Light. Yeah.
Traveling Light.
Traveling Light was a collection of like fictional short stories, about six of them.
Right.
And I wrote like two of them.
Uh-huh.
And then after that, the book that I authored on my own is called The Domestic International School.
Correct, yeah.
So that's the book I think you've also read.
Yeah, the one I read. That is it's a children's book, but it was so much fun to read. It took me 40 minutes to finish, of course.
Yeah, yeah. It's so, it's an airplane read.
Yeah.
You get into like a one-hour airplane, then you read through it.
Right.
And
that's the premise of this story as well. Where it's
the premise,
It's an airport that's been turned into a school.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. It's just basically that.
Yeah.
And I actually, when I started writing it, so the inspiration for this book came from another series of books called Wayside School.
Okay.
So Wayside School is basically a series of three books. So there's Wayside School is falling down, and then Wayside School is whatever, and then another one.
Ah, okay.
And
okay.
The premise of this Wayside School is there is a school which is a vertical building.
Right.
In the sense that there's only one room per floor.
Mm-hmm.
They've built it 30 floors like that.
Okay, right.
Because of
so it's an
error.
Upright building upwards.
Yeah, it's an upright building, and there was an error during construction, it seems. And that's why it's like
that's the premise of the book.
Yeah, and the break room is always in the ground floor. The cafeteria is on the ground floor. So by the time kids run down, the bell rings, so they just run back up. So a lot of stuff.
Yeah, okay.
And it's written in a very episodic way.
Right.
So what happens is you it's not a novel-like thing where you have to read from the first to the end. And in each of the episodes, it's like the same character pool, but it's
doing different,
different things,
different moments. Different emotions.
So like this story, the main character could have been like one of the background characters in the next stories. So I was like, okay, this is interesting because, you know, when kids read, sometimes they skip pages and they don't want to read the whole thing. But then if you give them like a do-it-yourself, read whatever you want.
It's just very more interesting that way. Yeah.
Yeah. So I started writing that, and initially it was a little difficult for me because I don't know how to be age specific when I'm writing, because usually whenever we all write, we end up writing automatically to relate to our current generation.
Or you write how you think, which is just like...
Yeah. So when I wrote this, I was initially a little skeptical about whether they would get it or not. But then I realized, okay, you know what? It's a book. Once it's published and it's printed and the kids have it,
right,
they can go back to it whenever they want. So even if they don't get something now, maybe 2 years later, they come back, read the book, and, you know,
figure something out. They're like, like a realization.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's how that happened. But I actually, my first authorly attempt was none of these two books.
Okay.
I started writing this book because I was really upset with the kind of Indian mainstream literature that was available, because it was all Chetan Bhagat's and like romantic bad edited stories.
Yeah.
So I was like, hey, why isn't there an action thriller from an Indian author?
Okay.
So I shall be the first and all that. So I started writing 20,000 words in. I think by then, you know, life had started, and I had a job, and I was doing stand-up and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so much of my writing would just go off to stage.
Ah, okay. That's what happened.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But if that could have been a book, then it would have been an insane book.
Yeah. So I mean, now, definitely, I would like to go back to that first ever book that I started writing. But I know that now I will have to write it from scratch, because like 6 years ago, me would have been really bad at writing compared to now. So
when you said your boss made you do the book, was your boss at your storytelling job?
Yeah.
You used to do storytelling to children, right? I think that's what you told me.
Yeah, yeah.
And what was what was the process there?
So basically, this office, the place I worked, it was called Multi-Story Learning. And they had a program called Book Lovers Program for Schools, BLPS.
Hmm.
And basically, it's a reading program that is masquerading as a storytelling program.
Okay.
So it's the basic idea of, if I give you a book and say, read it, you won't. But if I say, hey, you know what, I'm going to make it interesting for you, I'm going to like tell you a little bit of it, I'll hook you on, then I'll give you the book, then you'll definitely have to read it.
Oh, okay.
So that's the main thing. So the kind of storytelling that I did, it wasn't the conventional type where you have to start the story and also finish it.
Hmm.
Because the main aim is that the kids have to pick up the books.
Right.
You can mix it up. You can start from the end. You can start from the middle, whatever it is. Because at the end of the day, if a kid comes to you and says, hey, you said this, but actually this only happened. You know,
so
that
you give like an excerpt of what the book could have been just to entice the children into reading the book.
So
that
let's say we're going to take a 200-page book.
Hmm.
Then over maybe like two or three sessions, I may cover up to like maybe the third chapter.
Right.
And then move on to something else.
Uh-huh.
So it's always that starting something and giving it to them, and then
like, then let's see them run with it. Basically, yeah. That yeah. is it. So like with storytelling, which you do, like everything is basically storytelling. Like yeah. you write the book, that's storytelling. You yeah. do it live.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
is storytelling.
Yeah,
you do stand up is also storytelling to right. some extent.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing the first time you got in front of children to talk, that was your first attempt at this. How was that experience? Like, is it difficult to grab a child's attention? I think that is the...
See, grabbing a child's attention is one thing, right. but grabbing 40 kids' attention, that is a completely different other thing.
Right.
And you have to also consider the fact that, like, if you are interacting with a kid one-on-one, either you go over to their place or like they come over to your place. There's always that geographical dynamic that's happening.
Yeah.
The moment you go to a school, they're like, this is my classroom. Who
yeah.
are you?
Who
you are
you?
The new one. You earn my trust.
Right.
You earn my attention. So it's a little difficult. Like, you know, in stand-up, this is the first minute or the first 30 seconds.
Is when you grab your attention. Yeah.
I think with kids, it's that first 2 minutes.
First 2 minutes,
you
yeah.
need to show them that you are not like their teachers. You are cool. Or you are young. Or you have to do something to relate to them.
Something
like,
to make
cool.
them want to care to listen to you.
That's yeah, yeah.
Right. And what do you have a technique to do that? Or
so I had a couple of things I would do, like very gimmicky type stuff. One thing that I would do is, so I'm ambidextrous to a certain extent.
Okay.
Like I can't write on a notebook with both hands, but if you give me a chalk and a board,
blackboard, you can
yeah,
write on both
I
hands.
Can write.
Okay.
And I write block letters, and my handwriting is so bad on both hands that they match. So
that's one way to fix it.
Yeah. And you know, if you're left-handed, it's still like a thing. Oh, you're left-handed. Oh, that's cool or whatever. So I would go into class and I would start writing with my left hand, and then I would hear the whispers, oh, left hand, left hand, left hand. Then I'll switch to right and they'll be like, what just happened?
Yeah.
And that 2 seconds gap of like that confusion is where I would be like, okay, now you listen to me. And I would just like do casual stuff like, you know, throwing the chalk on the board and like catching it back and all of that stuff.
Right.
And so they're like, oh, wait, look, he's so casual.
Yeah.
He's so
let's
in his
see
element.
What he has to say there.
Yeah. So that's one thing. And the other way you kind of grab a child's attention is by asking them a question that it's so generic, but nobody will want to ask them. Like, you know, you walk into a class and be like, hey, what did you have for lunch?
Right.
Or like, hey, how was your day? Who's your friend? And these are questions they're not asked at all.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh, wait, you care about me. Oh, no, I also care about you. Okay.
Oh, nice. Okay. Oh,
yeah.
That's one way to do it.
Yeah.
So you went from narrating stories like in
yeah.
front of children to like writing for a child's book.
Yeah.
Now, if you had to start writing a book, okay,
yeah.
you already know that you're writing for a certain age
Correct.
Demographic already.
Yeah.
So with writing for children, what was the first few thoughts that bothered you like to start off? Because I know, like at the top of my head, because I haven't written or going to attempt to write for children, but my first few thoughts would be like, obviously the language has to be clean. It has to be understandable for the
yeah.
age group that you're writing. But what are the other things that you had to
so,
first train yourself to do?
I think one of the things that I learned right away was that for kids' stories, characters are more important than what's happening in the story. Like, as an adult, you might be more interested in the plot line.
I think something like Harry Potter, because I read Harry Potter when I was a kid. And
yeah.
that was aimed at that demographic.
Correct. So, like, it's always like, for the adults, it's like, hey, I don't care who this guy is. It's what he does and what the story, where the story is taking him that
right.
interests me. But with kids, you can give them, like, this really out-of-the-ordinary character. And immediately, they're in love.
Yeah, okay. So, I know what you mean. The more absurd or interesting
yeah.
the character
yeah.
is.
Like, they don't like real life.
Okay.
So you can't be like, hey, a boy just like you. No.
No,
like,
no, no.
Hey, a boy, there's a boy, he had green hair and blue eyes. They're like, whoa, I can imagine. It's fun. I would watch this on TV. Okay, now I'm interested.
Right.
So that is one, the character, which has to be like out there in some way or the other. It has to be out there. And the second thing I realized was with kids, actually the language is not a problem at all.
Really? Okay.
Because we think that kids speak a different lingo than us, but sometimes they are aware of our lingo, but they're still using their own words.
Right.
So you could go up to a kid and be like, yo, what's up? And he would know what you're saying.
Okay.
Like, he would not be like, what are those words that you are saying?
Right. Maybe it's a curious mind that will want to learn the word now.
Yeah. So yeah. language was not a problem, but also like the simplified language, I think ages 5 to 8. Or
okay.
maybe 4 to 8.
Yeah.
There, the language has to be simple because they're still picking up words.
Right.
But then between 9 and 12, they're just running with the readings.
Yeah.
So they're just like, they will get, pick up a dictionary if they want.
And figure out what
that word
is.
Yeah, they will figure it out and they'll use that word.
Which is what I was going to ask you next anyway, which is like when you start writing for a child or children's book, do you have to now dumb down your novel skills on paper a little bit, considering you have a targeting somebody who might not know words which are like more than 8 syllables?
Right. So, so dumbing down, that's a really interesting thing that I also learned as a storyteller, especially, is that dumbing down is something you should never do.
Okay.
Because dumbing down is essentially you being condescending one way or the other.
Yeah. But what if, like, in you understand that this, now we're not talking about like mental understanding.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, this is at an age group where we know that the understanding isn't as.
Right. So, I'll tell you what is the balance. So, what you can do is like when you're talking about, hey, complex things, how do I simplify it?
Correct.
You could simplify the way you're delivering it, but the complex idea can still remain complex and they will get it.
Okay.
So, that's what I mean by
don't. So, let them find out from context.
Yeah, yeah. So, that way what happens is they don't know only what you're telling them.
Right.
They will know more, or like they'll fill in the gaps wherever.
Oh, okay.
So with writing for kids, I think the one thing that I learned with the language was that keep it simple,
right,
but also don't take up too much pressure of, oh, will they understand this word?
Okay. Not like, so that's not the thought that comes while you're writing. Those are not thoughts.
Because
that
I write simple English anyway. So for me to you know, use words like exacerbated and all of that is very, very rare.
Yeah, and it's also maybe forced if you don't
use
it in your general vocabulary.
Yeah. Right. So, language was pretty easy for me. The one thing that, I had a problem with was sometimes there would be too many elements in the story. So, either, like, I think there are like three things. Either it is a funny story, or it's a sad story, or it's like a story that has like, you know, loss to gain sort of thing.
Right. But in coming of age kind of a story.
Yeah, coming of age. But in all these three stories, the ending has to always be on a lighter note.
For a kid's book.
For kids especially.
Yeah.
Because you need to be like, oh, but you know, life goes
right.
on.
You don't want your child to become demotivated.
Yeah, like a child can't be like, yeah, everyone's gonna die anyway.
Yeah, that's
why?
Oh, shit, you can't put your child.
Yeah, like, you know, imagine you had a child and you are like, no, you should do your homework. And your child be like, you're gonna die anyway. Like, oh, no. What have you been reading?
Oh, yeah. Oh, shit. Yeah, I never thought of that, actually.
Yeah.
So when you're writing for children, then it's quite essential that this, I'm guessing, like, no sad endings.
Yeah, no. So no sad endings, one. Secondly, sometimes you don't even need an ending.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, conflict resolution is basically what every story is about.
Right.
Because every story, what the problem is the middle.
Yeah.
So there is one story in my book where it's just about this one PT teacher. And that's all there is to it.
Right.
Like, he says these wacky rhymes and he's always like, he's retired from the services, but he still feels like he's fighting for the country and all of that.
Okay.
And that whole thing is just that.
Yeah.
There is no story there. You can just throw a character to them with a scenario.
And it's, when the scene it's ends, an interesting it's character, they'll still pay attention to.
Yeah. They don't need that conflict and all of that. They're just like, oh, wow, this guy is weird and I like him. I'll just see him through this.
Okay. Nice. Actually, glad you brought up your book, because there's, I think, one segment in your book.
Yeah.
Towards the end, about a kid threatening one of the receptionists with a knife.
Yeah.
Saying that if you don't let me into the class, I will cut myself. Or
so actually I got some flack for that.
So that is what I was going for. Like, because that threw me off, because now I am not reading the book like I'm reading it.
Right,
reading it from a mind of, oh, wait, this is not for me. This is a kid's book. And then suddenly this threw me off a little bit, because I'm like, oh, shit, the author just spoke about a child misusing a blade. Now, isn't that going to cause a negative repercussion to...
So, this was what was the feedback given to me from one of the schools that the book went to. And the idea there is not what is a child going to do, but it's more like how far is a child willing to go to get what they want.
Right.
You know, because we've seen kids throw tantrums, like they'll just lie on the floor for hours. Yeah. And it's sort of like that. And it was like when... and I was writing it, this image didn't come to me.
Yeah.
Because I was like, what if I was a kid and I had something in my hand that I have been told is a harmful object?
Right.
Then I will use that against the other person and say, you only told me it's harmful. Look at me, I'm holding a harmful thing. Do you really want to not give me what I want?
Yeah.
That's what I was going for. Because kids can blackmail you without you even realizing that they're blackmailing.
That is very true.
Yeah. So that is what I was going
for. So you played from the kid's mindset. Is that what you do? Like, so when you write, say if I'm writing as a character, hypothetically, if tomorrow I'm writing a crime novel, in my head, I would base one of the characters on somebody I know.
Yeah.
You know, pick up traits from people I have seen. Things like that. That's what most writing is.
Yeah.
But when you're writing, when your kid, in this book, luckily, it's a kid's book with kids' characters.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you have a kid's book with like adult characters in it, then you also have to now hold back information that you cannot give to children.
Correct.
Like, so, you can never have the tall man walks into light a cigarette. Now you can't put that into a...
Correct. But while that is a legitimate concern, kids in the 12 to 16 age group, they read Satyajit Ray books.
Okay, yeah.
And there he mentions, oh, he lit up a Charminar and all of that.
Yeah.
But it's a throwaway. Like, you know, like in stand-up,
only if you nitpick into it will you realize that there is...
Yeah, it's at, like, you know, when you're reading it, see, unless you have grown up in a kind of situation where smoking has been, like, told to you as a... Oh, smoking is a vice. Don't do it.
Yeah.
Then every time you see any reference to smoking, you'll be like, oh, look at him, he's doing that thing. Oh, but why did nobody tell him what I was told? But if you're just going to do a throwaway line, like, oh, this guy, he lit up a cigarette.
Yeah.
And then
move on with the
story.
Not
mention the cigarette at all. You don't have to complete the loop and say, and then he stubbed it. No.
Yeah.
He lit up a cigarette because that's what he does. But then what's more important is, what's he going to do next?
Right.
So I think the portrayal of complex adult behavior, like, you know, cigarettes or like drinking and all of that. That, like, there are some books that do it very subtly. Like, you know, so if somebody is drinking, you can just say that they had a glass in their hand.
Right.
Now, what's in the glass? If you're an adult, you would assume it's alcohol. If you're a kid, you'll be like, oh, juice. So you're just giving them a vague, you know, piece of information. And then you're like, now it's up to you. Whatever you color it with, so your responsibility.
Right.
Yeah.
That, when I was a kid, my dad used to enforce reading. Like, right now, I read quite a lot. I do.
Right.
I try to do at least a book a week, which stretches to somewhere to a book in 2 weeks.
Right.
And I try to stick to that principle of at least that many a month.
Right.
But when I was a kid, my dad was a big reader. He still is. He, like, I have a whole library in my house. One room is just a library.
Right.
And he would enforce reading on me. Right. So he would be like, this 1 month, finish this one. He'll give me a simple book, like an Enid Bretton, you know, that genre of books. And he'll say, finish this and write a book report by the end of the month to make sure that I start reading.
Right.
And the moment he started doing that, I didn't want to read anymore.
Correct. Because it's like, when you academize an interest, you lose interest.
Right.
That's what I have learned through life, because, like, I'm really interested in psychology, but I never took it up as a subject, because I knew that the minute you give me the formula to how it works, like, you know, we do stand-up, right? If there was an R.D. Sharma, like, manual or guide for stand-up, how many of us would want to do it?
Right. Now there's no fun,
you know,
in
all
discovery.
The tricks. Yeah.
Yeah.
So with reading, I think, and a lot of, at least for me, I think a lot of parents enforce reading to their kids, because they're like, oh, then he will read faster, he or she will read faster, which means they can prepare faster for the exams. And that's the approach.
Okay. It's
because
never a learning, picking up a...
Yeah, it's never
habit.
About, oh, reading is good. It's about reading is good because of this one specific way you can use it to get ahead in school.
Okay.
And I, like, you know, when you link one harmless hobby to, like, a competitive thing, like getting marks,
then there's a fun out
the
of it.
The hobby becomes a competitive thing, and you're like, you know what, I, this was a chilling activity for me. Now you've made it into a contest.
Right.
I don't
want to
do this.
So, if you want to get kids to read, I'm guessing the best way to do it is what? Leave a book in their room, hope that they pick it up. Then what? What?
The best way, I mean, I'm not just endorsing my job, but the best way to, you know, get somebody to read something is by telling them a story. And then at some point, somebody will ask you, oh, that's such an interesting story. Why did you read it?
Okay.
Because when you pick up a book, You read the title, you read the author's name, you can read the synopsis, you can read a lot of things even before you start telling the story.
Yeah.
But if you're going to verbally tell somebody a story, you're just going to be like, hey, so yeah, this happened. So that the name of the story doesn't matter. Who wrote it doesn't matter. Yeah. If it's interesting enough and somebody's like, why did you read it?
They're still listening to
it. Yeah. Then you tell them, well, I read it. And then they're like, oh, I also want to read cool stories like this. Can you suggest more books?
Yeah.
That's basically how
you build an interest in reading, not by giving books, but by...
Yeah. Like, I don't think anybody reads a book because they see somebody reading a book. I think it's because of...
I have heard about this book. This book must be good.
Yeah. And how do they hear about it? Because somebody who's read it is talking about it
to somebody else.
Yeah. So literature, in essence, can only be vocally advertised.
Right. You so, can't throw a book at somebody and say, come on, start reading. Yeah. That's not how it works.
I think also in the media, the quintessential reader has been given this like stereotype that, oh, if you see somebody who has glasses and is quiet, they are a reader. All quiet people are readers.
Yeah.
So, how to make a child a quiet person? Shove a book in their hands. That's literally like, sometimes it's just the formula. Oh, your child is expending too much energy. Your child is running around too much. You know, maybe reading is the habit for them.
Yeah.
I don't know why it's called reading habit.
Yeah.
Firstly, it should be called a hobby.
Yeah.
Because nobody reads, like, newspaper is something that you read. Okay,
habitually,
fine,
yeah,
habitually.
Correct. Every
but
morning.
Then I've never seen anybody lose their mind if the newspaper didn't come to their house one day. Like yeah. I've never heard of reading addicts.
Yeah, that
if
is
reading
true.
Is a habit.
Yeah.
Then that should also be reading addiction and like you know readers right, anonymous know. Or something
it,
like that.
It's just making it a very negative thing when you say it's a reading
yeah.
habit. Yeah. But I was talking to a friend of mine about your book, and I told him I want to do this podcast. He said that you should definitely ask you this question, which is what I. He told me that. You know how when you're in school, you already have 10 things to study.
Yeah.
You have science, maths, English, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You already have enough reading material.
Right.
Now, on top of all this, where do additional books for children fit in?
Okay. So, the program I worked with was not part of the school curriculum in any way.
Right.
And it was sort of like an indoor PT period of sorts.
Okay.
So, basically, for the kids, it's a relief.
Huh,
so
okay.
Let's say you have...
So you make it sound like a break.
Yeah, exactly. Which is why we don't give them marks. We don't give them assignments. Everything happens in class. The only thing they do at home is read the book that they have borrowed themselves willfully.
Right.
We are not going to go tell them what to borrow, nothing. We are going to stock a part of the library.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the books that we have got. And then we will monitor what books are coming in, what books are going out, how fast is this kid reading, how often does he or she, you know...
Read
the book.
Yeah.
And so the way it would work is basically the kids would look forward to this session because finally they don't have to apply anything they're learning in school.
Right.
For this hour. There is no maths, there is no science, there is no marks.
Yeah.
So it's just about, oh, I'm just going to listen and I'm going to read. I already know how to read. So I'm just going to listen and read and I'm going to have fun. And it's going to be interactive. And we do it only once a week.
Okay.
So, I used to have a timetable of my own. So, like an English teacher of sorts. And I did classes 4 to 8 in this one school in the last year of my storytelling.
Okay.
And I'd have Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I'd have 5 sessions. And I would not see them until next week. So, there is the controlling of the exposure and frequency.
Right.
That also matters. If this was an everyday class, they would lose their minds after like the 4th or 5th day. And then they'll be like, this happens every day, Rose Kananda.
Don't make it a routine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. That's how you get them there also. Also now, now it doesn't feel like effort.
Correct. And also the program that I worked in concentrated on the LSRW skills. So that's listening, speech, reading and writing.
Okay.
So what happens is we used to give them an activity book. Each kid has an activity book. And in that activity book, there'll be chapters, but they're not chapter 1, chapter 2. They're like one chapter will call fantasy, one chapter will call adventure. And in each chapter, there'll be one short story that's printed into the book, which they will read in class.
Correct.
And then there'll be activities that are loosely based on the theme. There is no strict reinforcement of anything. And those activities would be ranging from drawing to like writing to, you know, folding stuff and learning DIY stuff.
Okay. Yeah,
and
yeah.
So it's
more of an engaging session than.
Yeah, it's like art and craft with words.
Correct.
In a sense. So a lot of kids actually, more than the kids, the parents love it. Because they're like, if I had something like this when I was growing up, right. I would have actually appreciated a lot. And I'm glad that this is being done for my kids.
Correct.
And, you know, they're getting their own outlet out of it.
So that's what the good part of doing that project.
Yeah, yeah.
But before we get to the end of the podcast, two things I want to quickly cover. One is, if somebody is now planning to get into this writing for kids, if somebody is interested,
right. What
would be step 1, 2, 3? Like, where do you start? Because is it just get your writing on point and then writing for kids is not very difficult, or do you have to train yourself separately?
So I think writing for kids is one of those things where you just have to think about how were you as a child. And because you have that baseline,
right,
you already are in.
Okay.
Like, every adult can write for kids because every adult was a child at some point.
Yeah.
And so what happens is, when you go back, like, we keep thinking, you know, like, oh, this generation is like this, that generation is like that.
Yeah.
But all kids have those common things they do.
Yeah.
They all have the common emotions that they feel. And you have felt that at some point. So you can go back. Like, you know, why is Secret 7 or Famous 5 so awesome? It's not because kids solving crimes is a reality. It's more that a bunch of friends are doing something.
Yeah.
I also used to have a bunch of friends. We used to sit in the lunch break and do things.
Correct.
So that's the nostalgia. So the first thing is, find your nostalgia point.
Hmm.
The second thing would be, write the story as it comes to you first. And then go back and maybe, like, you know, if you know some kids who are in that age group that you are aiming for, give it to them, like, you know, a manuscript or whatever, and then see what they have to say.
Right.
Like, for me, the biggest advantage of writing the books that I wrote for storytelling was that I could write them while I was
still at work
with the kids who were going to read my book.
Right.
So they kind of were part of my writing experience.
True.
And it wasn't like one of those times where you've written a book, it's out now. Now everything is just feedback.
Yeah.
You can't do anything now, but I would read it out to them and be like, hey, what do you think? And then I would use that as the hook and say, okay, the book's coming out. All of you gave suggestions. Read the book and find out if your suggestion made it.
Nice. Okay.
So that's how it is. The third thing I would strongly recommend is reading kids' books of the age group that you want to write for.
Okay. Because they all vary in some way.
Yeah, it gives you a baseline. Because Indian books for kids and the Western books for kids are vastly different in the style of language and all of that. And also, there are things that we don't relate to when it comes to, like, Western stuff.
Right.
Like Mallory Towers and all of that, we may not relate to.
Correct. We need a Howrah Bridge or a Chai Ki Dukan.
Yeah.
We need those things.
So what is the connection you have? So at every point, it's always a connection. First, you have the nostalgia connection. Second thing is, you figure out what is the language that is easiest for them.
Right.
And the third thing is, like, where are they from and what is the most important thing for them now?
Yeah.
Like, if the kid is in fourth or fifth grade, they would be way more interested in a story about a stolen pencil box because it happens to them all the time.
Yeah.
But if it's a kid in eighth or ninth, they would be more interested in a story about bullying or something because that's happening to them at that point.
Yeah.
And if it's a kid like that's in 11th or 12th
grade. It's as simple as understanding your audience.
Yeah, understanding your audience, but also making sure that you don't sound like you're pandering.
Yeah.
Like, you know, sometimes, like, you read some books and you're just like, I feel stupid because you sound too wise. Just because you're the writer, you think you know everything, but can you meet me halfway and be human for once?
Right.
Yeah. So those are three things that I would recommend writing
for
kids.
If you're writing for kids.
Yeah. And also, I think the trick to writing for kids is that, as an adult, if you can enjoy a kid's book, a kid will definitely like it.
All right, that's true.
Because as an adult, you are able to go past your adult life problems and enjoy a kid's book.
Yeah.
A kid doesn't have a life yet.
Yeah, the kid doesn't have to worry about EMIs and bills and things like that. Yeah.
Yes.
The kid is reading for fun.
Yeah.
Right. And you didn't move away from doing storytelling for kids to stand up because you didn't like that job. This happened. It was just a
natural
transition of things.
I didn't I didn't know storytelling was a thing until I started doing it as a job.
Right.
And for me, from the start to the finish, it was just a job.
Right. But you didn't leave that job to come to stand up because you were tired of doing that. That was not a day job for you.
I wasn't tired of doing it, but yeah. You know, the kind of job that I had, there was no scaling up beyond a point.
Right.
It's more like, let's say you work there for a year or two. You're just honing the same skills you have, which means now you can do more work because you can do faster, so more volume.
Right.
So a lot of people would join and they would be there for 2-3 years and then they would always move on to studying something else or something else related to whatever they did last.
Right.
But for me, I don't actually like kids. I'm not great with kids.
Yeah.
So I never tried to have any connection with them. So I would just be like, listen, this is my job and that's why I'm doing it.
Yeah.
Just like, you be nice to me, I'll be nice to you. I'm not the kind of person to be nice to kids because I think that's how they will...
Yet, even through all that, you still have like a book that panders just to them.
Yeah. And you know, I have actually never had problems with kids not liking me.
Huh.
For some reason, they like me. And I think it's also because I tell them the things honestly that other people go around, you know, and say like, when I used to like have problems in class, usually 7th grade or 6th grade, mainly 7th grade used to be a big problem. Because they're just adulting.
Yeah.
And they want to challenge authority all the time.
Correct.
So, in their mind, they're like, this guy is not a teacher.
So, we can mess with this guy. Yeah. True.
Like, I'll just sit for 40 minutes and do nothing.
Yeah.
I will waste your time as well as mine. It's okay. I'll keep playing like mind games with them. And at one point, you know, they realized, okay, you know what? We have had fun with him. Because we have, you know, earned that.
Right.
That was the first thing that I established. I said, I'm not going to be nice to you because it's my job. Mm. I'll be nice to you if I think you deserve it. So we can have a fun class.
Right.
But that means you also have to participate.
Right.
I'm not going to put all my effort in.
Nice. I usually try to end all my podcasts with one story from your workplace. Your one aha moment from working with kids or writing for kids.
One aha moment.
Yeah. Okay. Do you have anything you want to share?
I used to also travel to a lot of schools in the first couple of years of doing storytelling, and these schools I would visit maybe once in 3 months, and if I had a really nice session the last time, the next time I would come, the kids would literally be like, we missed you,
yeah,
we were waiting for you, oh, he's back, like they would welcome me like on superstar, like, hey, he's back again, hey guys, come on, let's settle down, he's back again.
I had a few teachers like that.
And you know, that sort of makes you feel like you're making a difference. So you're actually, you know,
your message got through the last.
Yeah, time. Your message gets through, and that's the validation that we all seek. No, like we are doing something for somebody.
Right.
They appreciate it so much that the next time they see you, they're like, "Hey, man, great job!
Great job!
Thank you so much
for coming." And getting that validation from children must have been
something. Yeah, yeah. Because kids remember, adults forget.
Oh my god, that is so true. All right, that's almost the time we have.
Done.
Soda, thank you so
much
for
being
on my podcast, man.
Yes,
it was so much fun.
Yes.
What is next for you? Are you going to anytime plan to go back to that genre of writing, or you've left that life behind?
So I have sort of right now moved into non-fiction writing, like outside of stand-up, of course. I'm like writing like scripts and stuff like that. But I do want to go back. Once in a while, I have these ideas and I'm like, okay, maybe at some point I might write another kid's book.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I might proactively do it anytime soon.
Right.
If somebody came and said, hey, can I draft you to write a children's book? I'll be like, cool, I'll do it because you asked me, I'm going to get paid, and so it becomes work.
Yeah.
But as a passion, I don't know if I would go back
to go back there anyway.
Yes.
All right. That was being said is a great way to, I think, end the podcast.
Yes.
I'm not sure if it is, but it is.
See you around in the walk of life.
Yeah. All right. Thanks. Thanks for plugging my podcast on my podcast. All right. That was the episode. Yeah. Thanks for that. This was the end of the episode, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for listening all the way to the end. If you like the episode, do send me your feedback. I go by Comic Curry on all social media platforms, that is Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Just look for me, send me a message, let me know what you think. I would wait to hear from you, and I'll see you in 2 Fridays with another episode. This is the Walks of Life podcast.